Good morning, everybody. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors on this lovely Monday morning. Eric Nolene is here, Coach Dub. Eric's beautiful backdrops are no longer a part of the show. He has returned. Now it's back to work. We got the season coming up. Fall camp starting here in a couple days. We're going to have some coverage. I think we will have media availability and stuff like that. So it's about to fire up. No more just creating lists every week. We got real stuff to talk about, boys. Talking season is slowly ending. Michael, what's up, dude? Yes, sir. Brett. Wales. You didn't come back through New Mexico this time, right?
Oh, yeah, no, I did. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because you'll say that karma got me, and I'll just say no. It's just whatever. Everything that happens when I go through New Mexico happened again. So yeah, we were stuck on the side of the road about 2 a.m. Blinking engine light, you know, thinking we were screwed. Finally, we come up to a Love's, and about, you know, finally we rested. The automobile's workable again, and they have a little RV stop at the Love's, the only one I've ever seen, and they had two spots left. Yeah, we limped home. Took us about 45 hours of drive time to get home. Got in at 2:30 last night, but you say 33. Brett Nussel says 33 days until the season. I think it's about 3 days till the season. You know, Wednesday is when my season really starts.
Yeah, it's about to fire up. Morning, AR. All right, before we go, guys, let's make sure you guys pick up Paul's book, 2025 Longhorn Football Perspectives, Thinking Texas Football. Y'all know the drill by now, and I don't know why you haven't bought it. If you haven't, go ahead and do it. Links are in the description. It's the best preview for Texas football, but also SEC preview, the world of NIL, Eric's piece on the recruiting world. This is like Christmas for a Texas football fan, and you know as soon as it comes out, the season is going to follow right behind that. Make sure you pick it up. All links in the description, digital as well as physical copy. All right, since we have camp starting in a few days, we're going to talk team. We're going to talk all the little final questions. Chat, throw any questions you have before fall camp starts, because, of course, we're going to be on that heavy. We're going to talk some battles, and then we're going to go over some notes that Eric dropped Friday. First, we're going to start with running backs. This is a running back preview Eric's doing, but he's going to do it for every single position coming up here. So y'all need to get it. It's going to be all your team source stuff, all your news stuff. You're going to know exactly where the hierarchies are, the questions about each player, who they feel confident with, all of that stuff. So if you read these articles, sign up to Inside Texas, you will know what's up with each position room. Do it. You'll be a more educated fan. You won't be the fan on Twitter just making stuff up about, don't sleep on this guy. It's like, well, none of the reports talk about this guy. I wonder why. So y'all need to do that. Be an educated fan. We know you love the squad. We'll start running back because it's a interesting position room. Earlier in the year, I was like, we have to take a transfer.
Yeah. Because
guys were hurt. And then guys come back. Of course, we got Trey Wisner, the noble leader of the room. But we're getting some of the young guys back too. So this room has changed. I feel good about the five we have, I think. So this room's been through an arc over the season. So let's talk running back in the offseason. Let's start off with Trey Wisner. We're going to get the usuals here. Top leader, great guy, all of that stuff, right?
I don't know why it's formatted like that. Did I not format it right? I don't know, man. I started with running back because it's probably the easiest position to write, and I am dragging ass this morning. One thing I meant to add there, because I was outlining this in my mind last night, is I had a different source predict three different leading rushers for the season this year. Of course, Trey Wisner got a vote. CJ Baxter got a vote based on largely how they feel that he's going to end the season or play the second half. Also have somebody that thinks Christian Clark is going to lead the team in rushing. So that tells you a couple things. It tells you that, A, they're a whole lot deeper than last year, but there's also a lot of variables that are still in play. And, you know, August will tell us quite a bit, but it might not tell us the full story.
Yeah. And then so we got Wisner getting bigger and stronger. That's a big thing, right? So if you add size and you get reduced workload, that's normally a recipe to maximize a player. And so that's something that I think is really important. Coach, what do you think when you think Wisner, looking at it from a coaching perspective, what does he do well? What does he need to work on? All that kind of stuff.
I think the biggest thing to me, besides running through the tackles, man, I think he's patient enough. He has really good contact balance. We saw it as the season got on. Like, he'll bounce off guys, man, and stay upright and keep going. I think those shoestring tackles still get him sometimes. All right? You kind of see him slipping a little bit, but Same thing with C.J. Baxter his freshman year, right? When he got a lot of carries, he was going down, people were tripping at him, swiping at his feet, and he would fall, right? And so I think that balance or keeping it stand on their feet when people contact him below the ankles, man, will be probably the biggest thing. But he does everything else, like, really, really good. Like, oh, everybody said, oh, he's not that fast, but nobody caught him. You know, I guess that one time he thought – I guess he got stripped from behind – was it OU game, I think? And then the receiver jumped on the ball. But other than that, man, like – I think he does everything well. I think he's a guy that's underappreciated for what he does. I'm not saying he's Trey Newton, but he has that kind of workmanlike attitude, how he carries the ball. I think he's that type of running back. He's just going to do everything well. He's not going to say super wow you with anything. He just does everything really, really good across the board to me. But I was going to ask y'all something. What do y'all think about this running back room, man? Like, I'm not saying they're Ronnie Brown or Cadillac Williams. But remember those two guys, they had three running backs. I think they had Brandon Jacobs too. And everybody kind of rotated and got carries and did well that year. I don't know if this room is, you know, that quite that talented, but maybe so.
Yeah.
Have a chance to be.
Well, I think it's counterintuitive. The competition is actually a very good thing for Trey Wisner because it's going to improve his duty cycle. You know, he won't get as many carries. He won't be as beat up. He'll be bigger, faster, stronger. At the same time, he'll be fresher. You know, I think they're all going to help each other play better. I think the running back position by committee is going to be a thing for the most part. You know, there will be a lead back eventually avail himself. I'm not sure when that's going to be. I'm not sure when that even needs to be. I think Trey's going to get the bulk of the carries against Ohio State. That makes by far the most sense, right? And then September, I think there's a huge period where they're not going to play Trey Wisner nearly as much. They'll probably play the true freshman who I didn't discuss nearly as much in this preview just because I'm trying to keep it as relevant to the season as possible. And then October is where I think it's truly going to get interesting. Baxter's going to be back. He'll have a lot of practices and pads. He'll have some carries in games. Clark will be, you know, getting that development that he didn't get last year. Last year was supposed to be an important developmental year for him. Jarrett Gibson, of course, is going to get some more development. October is when it's truly going to get interesting in that room to me.
Yeah, week one, Ohio State, we just need what we know we got. And then you have several weeks of weaker ranked teams. That'll be an advantage. Let me refresh this real quick. All right, there we go. All right. Big question. How healthy are Baxter and Clark? We've heard Sark, both from your reporting, but also recently in public, where he's kind of tempering expectations on Baxter. He's like, hey, man, we don't expect him to come out and be a killer in week one. And then he talks about the length of the season, all of that kind of stuff. All these hints that they're going to bring him along slowly with that injury. Yeah. So what's the latest there?
Well, yeah, that's why I've been saying it all offseason that, you know, I don't know what to expect of Baxter in the, you know, first week. And then the surprise to me was that he was back in, you know, early-ish to mid-June workouts. And I'm thinking, well, did they change their mind? Because I'm sitting here thinking, well, I've been selling it all offseason that he's not going to have a huge immediate impact upon returning. And then Sark started saying basically publicly what I've been hearing privately for a very long time that, you know, it's a long season. Obviously, they're hoping to play 16, 17 games. You know, crunch time is in the second back half of the conference schedule. And then, of course, you know, assuming they make the playoffs, I think that's when he's going to really start to assert himself starting in October. I do think he'll, you know, get some warm up carries probably in September. I don't think we're going to see a lot of them then either because, you know, that, yeah, you want him to knock the rust off, but you also don't want him to get hurt playing a scrub team. And then, yeah. You know, how ready is it going to be versus Ohio State? I'm not sure that's the team to bring him back for. But, you know, you never know. I don't think anybody going into the Alabama game 2023 would have thought that Jonathan Brooks would have been the guy finishing off that game after they had gone with C.J. Baxter as a starter. Maybe would have thought that beforehand. But, you know, they've got a lot deeper bench, so there could be some surprises. The guy could assert himself a little bit earlier than we think. But right now, you know, Clark coming back in spring, that was big to me because that, you know, you're going to knock off that rust a little bit earlier. He's a bit more of a known going into August. He's a very talented. He's still believed to be the most dynamic runner on the roster.
Yeah.
We need to hear about that in August. But then Baxter, I do think we're going to hear about him. I think they're going to kind of bubble wrap him. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts off August in a green jersey, a non-contact jersey. And then they bring them along slowly. But we're going to hear enough about them in workouts, in pads, certainly with Clark to know how back are they? You know, we had heard that Baxter was about 90%, which to me, that's pretty promising given the extent of his injury. And that was in, you know, late June or so. We're going to learn a lot more about him in August what to expect this season, but that doesn't mean it's going to be what to expect against Ohio State.
And Clark, like you said, most dynamic. I agree. The biggest thing is, yeah, you lose your first year of, you know, on-field reps. That's pretty serious. So game speed as well as like just being able to read, right? And whatever zone run or whatever, we're going to do more gap. We'll talk about that, but just make sure you understand your progressions as a back too, because they're same as a quarterback. They're reading things. So it's all of those little things for Clark, but I agree. I think he's the most dynamic mover.
When Baxter got hurt last year, that was a lot of the talk behind the scenes was, okay, Clark is going to get a lot more carries. He came in a little bit raw. He's going to expedite the process. We saw Jared Gibson have his struggles. Clark, that was the season that Clark was going to do that. He was going to flash some big plays, but also make some mistakes. And then what, like a week later, he was lost for the season too. So yeah, he missed a very important developmental season. It's not like it was entirely a waste of time. He was in the program last year. Definitely saw a lot of mistakes. You can see the mistakes from the stands. I mean, honestly, we had, you know, Javion Osborne was saying, hey, these guys are missing some holes here or there that they would have seen with more time. He did lose some valuable time, but it wasn't a total loss. But now he's got to hit the ground running, hopefully, and we can start putting that talent to bear. The good thing about him, he's a natural runner. And so it's not like he forgot. As long as he's got still the athleticism in his lower body to get where his head wants to go, he's going to make some plays. Now, some of them are going to be off schedule. Some of them might have the coaches pulling their hair out. He didn't run it where the ball was supposed to go, but it still worked out because you're talented. I think there's going to be some highs and lows for him, but the highs are really going to catch people by surprise.
Yeah, and all the mental reps are there, right? It's not like he's missing meetings because he's injured, you know? So it's like it's just getting your body to do exactly follow what your mind is saying.
Exactly.
Shifting the run scheme. Yeah. More gap runs. So what does that mean? That means somebody's pulling and then you're following them. Or it's duo, which is the funnest concept ever to have to try to explain to people. It's like inside zone, but it's a gap scheme. It's more double team. It's a nightmare to explain duo without sounding like a dummy, but
drop in.
he's gonna run to the tight end side, basically. So that's gonna be interesting. But this was a strength of Baxter in high school, and Eric mentions that if you watch his huddle, Baxter would just follow somebody up through their gap and they would do their thing. So zone runs are cool because it gives you a plurality of options, right? You're able to do all sorts of different things. Right. But sometimes that can be confusing for offensive lines, especially when teams like Georgia are shifting at the snap all the time, changing your assignments all the time. So this might be a simplified way that helps the running backs and makes it more clear so the offensive line can go and attack and down block and have basically easier leverages sometimes.
Look, so I love it because you recruit all these big humans. Like, let's let them be big bullies and get up on people and then move them out of their gaps, move them out the way with the double teams. I think it really, really, really benefits somebody like a DJ Campbell who's really, really aggressive, right? He's going to bully some people this year. And so it also helps your tight ends. You don't put them in a lot of single blocks. They're helping to tackle a lot, seal the edge versus that defensive end. So I think it really, really helps. It's so much easier to read. And, you know, we've come out of the shotgun. It's easier to read out there because running outside zone, inside zone from the shotgun, running lateral, you can't see the play develop as much unless you're in a pistol or behind the quarterback running downhill. And so I love this. I love this scheme. I think it's easier to learn. That's why a lot of people in high school run it. And I think you put your guys in the most successful position possible to be successful, to run the football this year.
Yeah. Each play has predetermined tracks of where the ball's supposed to go. And, you know, it's think about a train. It's just running that line and it's easy to know what to do. And obviously the variables come in, defender's going to make a play. You still got to be a running back, use your feet, use your vision, use your balance, all that stuff. But it's easier to play aggressively as a running back. And that's why you saw Baxter playing with more hesitance as a freshman when he was in zone. He's thinking too much. He's not playing. It also helps, like we're talking about, the interior O-linemen have more power at the point of attack than they did last year. If you look at the trades across the board, Campbell's in the best shape of his life, so he's a better version of himself. You've got Cole Hudson with a lot more power, guard power, playing center, which we saw, you know, he was moving bodies at guard. And then Neto for Hayden Connor. They should be able to get more guys off the ball. Now, you know, that's kind of a theory. We've got to see him do it. Yeah, but on paper, this is an exciting development, assuming that they do run it as much as we've been hearing.
And you can tag it and still do all your read stuff with the quarterback off of it too, right? So if they, you know, because there's ways to defend counter too, right? And if they're anticipating counter, they can try to like jump the gap, that kind of stuff. But then you tag Arch can pull it off the back. Now you have some plurality as well. And apparently plurality is my word of the day.
There's going to be a plurality of RPOs off of it. There's a lot of different things to do.
Yeah. It's going to be cool. Have y'all talked about the Deion situation? I'm not educated enough on it. I saw a clip this morning where he said he had to write a will, and I know that he's going to do a press conference or something. But I don't know enough about the situation to.
He has to write a will. I mean, okay. So I've been on the road. So
there's some serious medical issues he's going through, apparently. And so they're doing like a press conference here. Is it today? I don't know.
It's supposed to be today with his medical team or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hopefully it's not that serious. But a lot of people prep will anytime they go under anesthesia. You know that just some surgeries that are, even though you have a very high success rate of being perfectly fine from you, they still have you do that. He's also got significant assets that he's going to have to allocate. Hopefully it's not serious. I haven't really been paying attention, so
yeah,
I'm gonna have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, he's been out of the mix or something, and he's been out of the mix for a while. They're doing medical thing. He said he's prepping the will, which I was surprised because I thought, you know, like I said, with that wealth anyways, generally you have your will kind of there. But it's interesting. But I'm not gonna speculate on it because I'm not educated enough. And like we said, if it's something very serious, I don't want to, you know, speak.
What time was that press conference?
I have no idea. It's some point today. Someone in the chat, look it up. It's on Twitter. I saw.
He didn't set a time. Just said today. So.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll know more later. I just don't want to speculate on something that could be potentially serious. What we won't learn. We kind of hit this. The pecking order probably until October. We're going to need to see Ohio State and then 3 weeks of lesser skilled teams. And also little things, right? Clark missed a year of development. How is he at game speed? You know, how's Baxter staying up after the tackle?
I think I'm going to hear some of that stuff. I think I'll have a pretty good idea of what to expect out of Christian Clark by the end of August, and probably Baxter too. I think as far as their health goes and the ability, maybe not reliability on a guy like Clark because he's still, you know, like I said, he's still, you know, coming into his own. But we'll learn a lot about them from a health standpoint, just how good of them, because, you know, they've got a whole SEC to compare these guys to. Everybody knows what a really good running back looks like. Everybody's been around them a long time. So we're going to have a good idea of how athletic and how gifted those guys are, how talented they are when you compare them to running backs throughout the conference, throughout the country. We're not going to know the pecking order, though, because, you know, three different sources think three different guys are going to lead the team in rushing. And then you got to really beat Trey Wisner over the head to take something from him.
Yeah. Good luck. Like, that's going to be tough, man. How does Ian's theory about the more guys you have to name when outlining room, the less likely are to have the guy? You don't have a Bijan, right? Like, we know we don't have the guy, you know, like for, you know, first round talent. We know we don't have that right now. So that'll be tricky, but also running back's a little different, right? It's a depth based room. So naming several guys to me actually feels better.
Every situation's different. You know, when you look at the room, they're a lot better off than they were last year. The floor and ceiling are so much higher than they were last year. And so I think that's going to give you confidence that this is at least an above average running back room. Last year was average and mainly because there was zero depth. Trey Wisner had zero help. He's got a lot more help. I'm not worried about it. I mean, sometimes that's true. If you're talking about Texas's 2021 roster, it would be an issue, not necessarily running back because they had Bijan, but a lot of positions, they lack talent across the board and depth. They've got real depth here. So, damn it, this is a good source right here. I'll get him on the phone after this and see what's going on.
Yeah, so this is a good point that Justin Wells makes. I want to hear about ball security, and that's something that Eric can ask about whenever things get going, but nervous for every non-Wisner play last season. Yeah, that was weird. Guys were dropping the ball, so that's going to be a big factor. Remember when we lost to Washington too, we were dropping the ball. So that's going to be a big factor.
It's time to bring back the program. Carry the football around campus. Do what you got to do.
Doing that. So that's another thing that about Clark. We don't know anything about his ball security. Jerry Gibson had some issues last year, obviously, a lot of issues. So, yeah, we'll have to see. Some of that probably won't come out to the game because it's really hard to mimic game-like situations. You know, you're running, you're awkward, the ball's away from your body, it's easy to knock out, or you're in the open field and somebody gets you from behind. God, we've all had that feeling in the stadium. You can see it happening, the guys gaining on the runner. Yeah. You can see the arm go up in slow motion. You're all, no, beer spilling. And, I mean, you need game scenarios to really judge ball security. But ball security is one of the things that can be fixed and fixed relatively quickly. There's guys in the NFL Hall of Fame that struggled with it.
If I could pick one coaching position, I'd be a GA that gets to try to punch the ball out on running back drills. I would be a specialist. You know, they'll have the gloves. They'll have boxing gloves, gloves tied to sticks. Hey, man, I'm telling you, I'm getting that out. We're going to be trained.
The giant Q-tip.
Yeah.
I got a video of myself doing that at UNLV. Man, I was punching dudes in the face, just trying to punch the ball out. I didn't care.
Yeah, it's psychological warfare, too. Just hit them straight in the face. So that's going to be a big thing. One thing that we didn't talk about, which is interesting, right, is Jared Gibson. We mentioned him right then. But what's going on there, man? Going into spring, it was like, hey, man, could be Gibson. What's going on there?
Yeah, we heard a lot of talk leading into spring. I think I mentioned him more than – I definitely mentioned him more than any running back in February and March. And then, you know, he had a good spring, but I think everybody was talking about Clark. And then, again, Trey Wisner, you really have to – you need a lead pipe to take something from him. And he didn't – you know, Gibson didn't bring the lead pipe yet. So, you know, we'll see. And, you know, Wisner is a much better version than he was last year. People don't understand how beat up he was. He had very little help last year. Wisner was just beat to hell. So he came into spring bigger, faster, stronger. And again, like I said, most important, he was fresh. He wasn't beat up anymore. And he had a really good spring, and Clark had a good spring too. So Jarek, I think is good. Based on what I'm hearing right now, I think Jarek's going to be running back 4. He's going to play. He'll still play a lot. But you know, we'll see. As much respect as everybody has for Trey Wisner, there's a chance that he finishes as, you know, like a third down back this season, and he goes back to special teams days. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, the weird thing about Sark too is, like, I'm not worried about their production. Like, I know that we're going to force a 1,000-yard rusher, so it's like, it's not like I'm worried about that. I'm just worried, what do we do against the top echelon, upper echelon? That's the big difference, but also that's super offensive line dependent.
Right. Are they running the ball with enough efficacy to open up the deep passing game and all this other stuff? That's what needs to happen. If that happens, then running back position has done its job. Last year, you know, they were way too predictable against the good teams because they had trouble running the ball.
Yeah. All right, guys, before we keep going, let's hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
All of our staff are going to be taking their kids to Academy Sports and Outdoors, hooking them up before school starts, getting them fresh, getting them some fishing gear, because why not?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Let's talk over some Friday notes real quick.
I have no idea what I wrote on Friday. 2,000 miles ago.
Whatever. I just read it word for word, and you're like, yeah, good point. All right, so first thing we want to talk about is wide receiver room. And this starts off with Joe thinking that Ryan Wingo is going to ball out in our
Joe stood up the round table. Me and Ian both had Wingo as our breakout candidate. I don't know. I assume that got published. Who's the camp MVP? It needs to be Wingo. So I was asking a source about that. You know, what's the latest on Ryan? I probably haven't asked enough about Wingo. Leaner but stronger. Faster than last year, but playing faster than last year, more importantly. That's the thing. It doesn't matter how fast you are if you're confused. But he's reacting a lot faster on the field, being where he's supposed to be based on what the coverages are showing him.
There we go. That's what we need to hear.
That's exactly what we need to hear. That's probably the key point. So what did the source said? I can't read that, but the source said that he thinks that Wingo will be a top 5 wide receiver in college football this year, and that is confirmation bias for me, because I've been saying that I think he's going to have a Romo Odunze career, minus the, you know, Rome had a redshirt freshman year. But if you go the first year they played, compare Rome to Ryan, very similar. It was Rome's redshirt year. Now I think it's all up from here. Rome exploded in his second year playing. I think Wingo's going to do the same. I think he's going to be a 3-year player.
Yeah, that's a big thing, because, like, I hear stronger and faster with Wingo. I don't really care. He was plenty fast and strong enough last year. Whenever I hear playing faster with more time in the system, that's when my ears perk up. Because that
yeah, when I hear leaner, I think that helps him become a better route runner. It helps you snap off your routes a little bit. I think you can get better that way. But yeah, it's all about processing because you know last year he was hell on wheels. It didn't you know that they just didn't get the ball enough to him on those predetermined plays. It's all about being on the same page with Arch. And I think it's an overblown concern because we see lesser wide receivers develop, you know, every year. This is not, it's not a concern. It's not the hardest skill to develop. It just takes a little bit of time. Time under tension, experience goes a long ways. He's got a lot more experience now that he'll be better for last season. There was some struggles, sure, whatever, it happens. But that guy works extremely hard. He's a sharp kid. Yeah. He wants to be great. And so when that happens, it just, you know, you force yourself to get better. He's going to get better. I'm not worried about it.
And Arch is a different quarterback. Arch will get the ball to him. Even sometimes where you're like, you know, if Arch believes in you, he's gonna give it to you.
If you watch that Brooks Austin video of, you know, talking about Arch recently, I guess it was a week or two ago, he said, man, you were on so many balls that he should have let loose. Exactly right. Arch Manning is going to let it rip. He's going to trust his ability to fit the window. He's going to understand, sure, man, you know, one of these might get tipped or picked, but over the long haul, I'm going to make a lot more plays than I'm going to cost the team. And, you know, let's go for it. And so I think Wingo is going to be a primary beneficiary of that. And this Eric Bird says Wingo got his eyes fixed. Yes, he did. You know, we've been talking about that. I think, yeah, we were talking about that before Springs got some things that'll help him out. But he's actually known as somebody that has good hands and good 50-50 ball skills. So that's, you know, I think he's going to be a much more complete receiver this year. Not quite Romo Odunze in the air, but better on the ground than Odunze, just as strong. And yeah, he's going to have, you know, 70 catches, 1,000 yards, 10 plus touchdowns. And we'll all laugh about the time that we had concerns going into his second season.
Yeah, look. The kid has success running slants, bubble screens, and reverses, man. Like, you put him and let him get some plays in the real offensive scheme, man, he's going to be dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, when he's running in the open field, you're just like NFL player, NFL player. Like, well, you know, as soon as you – it's such an easy eval. You're like, well, he looks incredible, dude, when he's just running down the field. It's crazy.
Yeah. I like that comparison to Terrell Owens in the open field. Just who wants to get in front of that, man?
Nobody.
No one. Jack Entry, Mosley's a moral, move the ball in short and intermediate routes. These damn mosquitoes, dude. They've been ruining my life this summer. While Ryan Wingo will bring the explosives. So I'll up the ante here. I think Moore and Wingo are going to bring the explosives. And then injuries and Mosley. So this, it'll be more safety nets. But this actually leads us into our next point. We have two guys here that hit the next point. Don't forget, Parking Livingstone, go deep.
There we go.
So that wide receiver three battle, right? We do have Mosley and Livingstone battling that out. And I know that from this quote that says that's a real battle. That's how we're able to figure it out.
I think Mosley's going to win that mainly because of what we heard when they brought him in. They loved his reliability and his intangibles. But, man, Sark really likes speed on the outside. And Parker will block his tail off, too. That's a big part, whether or not you're going to get on the field. Parker has good size. He puts it to use on corners. But then also he has that vertical speed. I kind of think Mosley's going to get the job because he helps the running game out a lot. He'll help the screen game out a lot with his blocking. He's got the experience, goes a long way. There could be a pretty even timeshare as the season progresses between those two.
I'll believe it when I see it with Sark. I'll believe it when I see it.
Right, he does like playing the experience, but he also likes playing the best player. So that could be where things get interesting.
Well, Chris Jackson, too, seems to go more to the NFL side, even with the guys he's recruiting. Like, you need to be able to do everything, right? Block all of that. Yeah. I agree.
Imagine Mosley driving a guy to bounce, then that corner guy get up the next play, and then got to cover Livingstone deep. Like, good luck. Because they don't rotate DBs like you do a receiver. So,
he's also going to think that Livingstone's going to be the blocker. It's like, I wasn't even the blocker. They're bringing in the blocker, this big old white tight end kid, frat boy looking guy. And then he's just going to run up, 22.5 miles per hour.
Brett Nelson, thank you for the chat, man. Number one, rank the importance of the big five games. Ohio State, Florida, Oklahoma, Georgia, A&M. How important is it? And then let's do part one. We'll rank it first.
All right, let's get Charlie's face up here.
I was going to say, how do we frame, you want real importance to SEC winning? Emotion, how do you want to rank this before we do it?
Well, I mean, maybe just to the season trajectory. That's why it's hard to answer. A&M's the last game of the season. Hopefully that's not the most important game. Hopefully it's not a must win, right? Let me see here. How do you prioritize the rivals, right? If you're over 50 years old, you'd have to have OU then A&M probably just because.
Right.
Or are you a Sight Wars guy and you'd have Georgia number one without a doubt, right?
It's got to be Georgia or Florida for the conference race to me.
Yep.
Yeah. So Georgia and Florida, and then between Georgia and Florida, Georgia's beat us twice. There's a narrative building. So I would go number one, Georgia, for because they're going to be good in the SEC. You need to win that game. But also,
rival.
Can Sark beat Kirby Smart? And then Florida, if you lose to them, people have already kind of scheduled in like, hey, Texas might drop that game. Yep. There's not a rivalry there, but they're going to be good. So to me, it's like Georgia, Florida, A&M, because I think they're going to be better than OU this year, OU, and then Ohio State. Ohio State's an ego game that I want to win, but I don't think will have a huge bearing on the season.
I would probably go similar. In the same exact piece, I mentioned how Georgia's mentioned quite a bit behind closed doors and Florida as well as like the toughest competition that they're going to face this year. Not trying to get bulletin board material to OU and A&M, but that's just how it is internally. But I will say that behind the scenes, nobody cares about anything else other than Ohio State. They feel like it's another chance to set the tone for the season, like Alabama and Michigan in the previous two seasons. It's just going to be how you value this. But I think if you go the proper way with Connor did, you know, how it affects your conference title chances or you know, making the playoffs, it probably has to be Georgia, Florida start. Then A&M, OU, I don't know, flip-flop those guys. And then Ohio State. You can drop that Ohio State game and still be perfectly fine in the playoff mix, perfectly fine in the conference mix. So
true.
But yeah, nobody wants to lose to Ohio State. They got bad fans. It's on the road in Columbus. You want proof of concept for your entire offseason, right? If you go in and drop that game, you might start questioning things like, hey, what happened? This, you know, we should have beat them. But yeah, I like how Connor had it.
Hey, Connor. Hey, Brett, can I give the coach's answer and say all five are important?
No, you cannot give the coach's answer and say
all games are important. You know, the first game is important to me. I don't know they're focused on that, but I would have to go Georgia. Just so much. I think that's the team you have to beat to get over the hump, I guess, so to speak, because we haven't beat them yet. I don't know if Florida's there. There's a lot of talk about Florida. So I would probably go Georgia, Florida, Ohio State, then A&M and OU. I know they're rivals, but –
I don't see how they would lose to OU or A&M this season.
And I
don't want to say their afterthoughts behind the scenes, but you know, that's not it, you know, A&M guys talking trash at media days. They're just kind of okay guy, pat them on the head and move along.
All right, part two. How important is Arch potentially winning the Heisman for Sark? Do you see him trying to run up the score a tad more to get him more Heisman hype?
No, first of all, Arch is his own Heisman hype.
True that.
Yeah.
He could go, you know, 15 for 23 Ohio State, you know, one touchdown, zero interceptions, and you know, the Heisman train will be right on the tracks. I don't think, you know, Sark needs to have that offense that everybody's been waiting for because it hasn't materialized for whatever reason. You know, some of his building up the roster in general had no offensive line when he got to Texas. So it was quarterback play. So I just think the offense needs to play much more consistently because that's what, you know, that was the letdown from last season. The defense paced that team. There's got to be a pride factor for him. The offense needs to carry more of its weight. But I don't, winning the Heisman's not important. That's, you know, whatever. That's, what is that? That would make his marketability even more. What is it already? It's astronomical. So I don't think that stuff really matters. What has to happen is that the offense is balanced, helps the defense out. The passing game complements the run game. The run game complements the passing game, and then they can go off and pair that with a national champ or with a defense, a good defense, and improve special teams and win a national championship. That's what really needs to happen.
Well, with Arch, Arch will run up his own score. Sark gives his quarterback – I mean, if you watch, Sark gives his quarterbacks like seven touchdowns a game. It's there. You know, we didn't hit it, but it's there. Like, Sark will let you put up 40 points and a half if you can hit your shots. But then he goes into his NFL mode, right? He's generally not going to run it, like, if you got a big lead. But, look, if Arch hits, you know, three quarters of what Sark schemes up for him, you're going to see Arch with a lot of points. We just don't hit those shots. And as Brooks said, they're there. Like you can see it in the all 22. And for whatever reason, we're checking down. And so if Arch doesn't check down, the safety's beat, throw it. And so it's not a problem. That's what's got to be frustrating for Sark, because he knows his offense not that explosive. But it's not because of the schemes. The schemes, the plays are there to be made.
Yep. And Arch is just a much better natural deep ball thrower than Quinn was. As natural as Quinn was in the mid-range, it's beautiful. Arch will hit those over the top when they're there.
Yeah. They're way more consistent, well-oiled machine. It can be times you're not even trying to run up the score, but you're going to score. You're just too talented. Hey, man, I wasn't trying to run the score up on you, but my player's just better than yours. And you know, they ran it to perfection.
There's a – I told it to Paul, but always pay attention to who players say their favorite players are. And you ask Arch, he says Josh Allen and Manziel. So these are running quarterbacks that are flashy, that like to make plays, don't like to go down. So just by that nature of who Arch watches, you should expect big plays. And the thing where you're trying to be a cool coach and you're like, hey, guys, we're running. It doesn't matter. Arch is still going to scramble out of the pocket and go for 40. So how important is the actual Heisman? I don't think that matters a ton. But I think the score gets run up naturally. Like I said, points have always been there. It's just, are you able to hit them?
Hey, I thought about Brett driving through Utah. Brett is one of our guys on the board. He's from Utah. They had this giant thing. We were near Lake Powell, so near the Arizona border. And my wife goes, "What the hell did I just see?" And it was like a giant cigarette boat morphed onto like an 18-wheeler, and it was part boat, part massive 18-wheeler, and I had this visual of Brett taking his families, probably numerous families, probably has a couple families that live on the same property together, taking them down to Lake Powell for a good time on the weekend. So I wasn't able to snap a picture, and we were making such poor time, I didn't turn around, but we didn't know what that thing was, but that was probably the Brett Nelson family's boat excursion vehicle.
Yeah, that'd be cool. He has a first and second string. You can get family one this weekend, family two this weekend. I have not a family member of mine. I'm trying not to give up a source here. I know of a human being that has two families, and they named their kids the same on both families. No mistakes can happen. That's how insane it is. But I can't reveal my sources, guys. But it is a fun fact.
Yo.
Going down to Lake Powell for some good old-fashioned
stuff. Oh, hey.
I wish I would have finished reading it before I brought it up.
I was trying to name the boat for like the next 15 miles or whatever the boat was.
Ship. Shout out BYU, baby. All right, guys, before we keep going, let's hear a word from our sponsor who loved that last comment.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
Shout out, Andre. All right. So let's talk big Ethan Burke, man. So he gets in, lacrosse player, tall, lanky. Then they're like, you need to put on weight. And he's like, bet. Not the best weight. He's probably hitting fast food weight, but weight nonetheless, right? And then, but it seems that he's actually focused a little bit more. And then we know he's known for making big plays in big moments, right? He's also known for looking like a panther, like his feet are at the linebackers whenever he's in his technique. Yeah. But this could be a big year for Burke, one that kind of jumps out. He has, you know, talent all around him, behind him, stuff like that. But we're hearing good things about him.
Yeah, I think I think the timeshare last year hurt him a little bit. Timeshare and also playing a new position probably hurt him a little bit. I think he's going to have that senior breakout that so many guys have had before him. To Vondre Sweat, not saying he's going to, you know, win the Outland or whatever, but Alfred Collins playing his best football as a senior, getting drafted. Vernon Broughton playing his best football as a senior, getting drafted. I'm expecting the same thing, probably third-round draft pick, maybe even higher based on what we're hearing. Looking good, like that dad bod is trimmed down a little bit. changed the diet up somewhat. But yeah, that you're right. He came on. He came to campus and immediately put on weight. It wasn't good weight, but it was like, hey, I just need to stand up at the point of, or I need to hold up at the point of attack. He's in a lot better shape and becoming more of a leader. So kind of putting it all together, like we've heard so many guys before him in the Sark era, where it's all coming together. We're hearing all the good things, all the hallmarks of a breakout. And I think, yeah, I don't know what would keep him from having it other than the fact that he might not be out there in some high leverage passing situations because Trey Moore might be there, or Colton Vosick might be there, or they're in some alien third down package that kicks him inside and he's supposed to just knife through and try to, you know, who knows? But on standard downs, he's going to have a good year.
Yeah, you know, Homer, we pointed out even last year, like Mr. Fundamentals, like he does everything right, man. It just he squeezes. If he's supposed to contain, he contains. He gets his hands on everybody. So to me, man, he puts it all together. He's going to be another kid that just gets drafted at the end of this year because he already does so many things well on tape.
I'm glad you mentioned that because in the previous weeks I've mentioned how savvy he is. You know, they say that he uses his hands great, very good economy of motion. There's no wasted movements with him. And that's how he's making plays so quick behind the line of scrimmage. It's not just his length. He takes a very quick route to the ball carrier or the quarterback. He's going to have a good year. I'm excited to see what he can do. There's always surprises, and we try to figure out who they're going to be. I think Burke is going to have a year that people go, wow, we didn't talk about it enough in the offseason.
Yeah. I can't believe A&M left him unblocked on that play. What an insane activity, man.
Yeah, and he, man, he exploded through there, right? Like, he wasn't even – Don't you guys see, be like, whoa, look how open I am. What's going on here?
Yeah, you're expecting a guard to come kill you, and it's just – he was just like, all right, cool. I don't know if that was schematic or they just busted. If they're like, oh, we can just leave him, he's not fast enough. I'm like, he's also 6'7", guys. He can reach and grab anything.
Yeah.
Ethan Burke being someone overlooked just shows you how good the talent is. On previous Texas regimes, Burke would be the star of the defense. Yeah, year one, that kind of stuff. Burke would be
there. Oh my. Hey, that team would have been a whole lot better with one good edge. That team, I mean, that just having soft edges on both sides crushed them. But Ethan Burke is a good player. And let's see where he gets drafted. I think he's going to be third round, maybe even higher because, you know, they're going to fall in love with his length and then the athleticism. He'll test better than people realize because of that lacrosse background. So yeah, it's exciting. That room is loaded. That room is loaded on paper. It's loaded in the recruiting with Wesley coming in, maybe Jake Krull, Lance Jackson doing Lance Jackson stuff behind the scenes. That's edges in a great spot. Two seasons of Colin Simmons remaining, not one.
Took the fantasy Superman this past weekend, ready for August 30th. I saw Superman and thought it was pretty good. I'm not a big superhero movie guy, but I thought it was all right. Fun. I don't know anything about Marvel. I quit after the second Marvel movie, and so I've been out of that conversation. But Superman was fun. Go give it a watch. Okay, special teams. This is cool because we're able to get some young guys involved. The Sark pipeline, like we've seen, nickel to corner, that kind of stuff. Second tight end to first tight end, that kind of stuff. Special teams is a good way to get your special athletes on the field early. Remember Trey Wisner? Like, guys like that, you would notice them first there. So hopefully we can see some impact for some freshmen for here. First one, Jonah Williams gets it for sure, right? Freaky guy.
Yeah, just get him out there, let him run down, hit people, hype, be the hype man. You know, if he can just be halfway as hyped as he is before kickoff as he is in the batter's box, you know, I think he's going to have the whole stadium ready to roll.
Yeah. Dalen McCutcheon, the second string slot that we hear a ton about.
Yeah, he might be second string returner. Maybe returner's not fully set in stone. Ryan Niblett is the expected guy. Niblett has a lot of, that's all about earning trust of the coaches. McCutcheon is definitely on that path to earning trust of the coaches. We'll see if he can take that job from Niblett this month.
Grayson Littleton, another player we heard a ton about. He'll do anything to get on the field too, so hungry on top of it, right?
Right. Yeah, he's smart. He's going to be reliable. You knew he was smart the second day. He's like, nah, just go over to star. Don't even waste your time at cornerback right now. We'll play in the tougher spot. Smart kid, fast kid. You know, both of those things play on special teams. He's going to play on special teams.
Yeah.
Ricky Stewart, the young running back.
Yep. He can do a little bit of anything. Like he's like the running backs that they've had in the past that are or like running backs that make the NFL roster that are like third string running back, but they have a lot of special teams value add. Keelan Robinson had that. Trey Wiseman before he came too important. Trey Wiseman, we're going to see him on special teams this year against teams like Georgia. I feel very confident about that, just because they're so important. But Ricky Stewart has the ability to do that stuff. Gunner, fast kid, tough kid, you know, all that stuff. He's going to play. He'll play on special teams this year for sure.
I love that. Man, got Terrell Davis, huh? Get on the field some kind of way to make the team.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And special teams focus this year, right? We weren't good in special teams last year. And somehow Banks is going to be able to yell even louder. And he's going to be able to make this decision.
He's got more experience than last season. And it's, man, it's stuck in everybody's craw, the special teams issues last season, especially later in the season, playoffs. It's frustrating for everybody involved because it's always been a point of emphasis. And last year, they know they didn't get it done. This year, I think special teams are going to make a massive jump. I think offense is going to make a pretty decent jump. And then the defense is going to be every bit perhaps better, as good as they were last year. And then you're going to have a much more complete team this season than last season.
Sure. Superman came up before Happy Gilmore. So my wife yesterday was watching the first one and the second one. I didn't watch either one, but I just thought it was funny that you would need to prep for Happy Gilmore too. It's like, I'm not going to be able to follow Happy Gilmore too if I'm not re-upped on Happy Gilmore.
It's been so long, man.
Yeah.
Wait, there's the Happy Gilmore 2 coming out?
Yeah, it came out.
On Netflix. Came out this weekend, right? Or something like that?
Yeah. And of course, people are like, man, it's not as funny. It's like, dude, it came out 20 years ago, man. It's the same thing when grown adults like talk noise on like children's film. There's like, that wasn't that good. It's like, yeah, yeah, man. It's you're in a different place in your life from whenever you were watching early Adam Sandler films.
Yeah, lately in my house, it is Space Jam nonstop, the Jordan one.
I used to love Space Jam.
Yeah, I still get hyped up at the opening when they go to the vignette of all the highlights.
Dude, the Monstars are scary, dude. Like when they you're like, this is an intimidating bunch, dude.
Yeah. And just said to my girls, like, we're gonna watch Space Jam today. Y'all gonna learn.
Yeah. Not the new one. We only watched
We only watched the old one.
Absolutely. That's how we got on it. Kid came home talking about Bron James, and we said,
Nope. How's Bosick doing? We've also heard great things about him.
So, yeah, that's why we're saying that we haven't talked enough about Ethan Burke, because we've been talking about Vosick all offseason. NFL player all day long. Second most talented edge that's going to play a lot. I can't, Lance Jackson's kind of a little bit different. But Vosick, as far as the guys that are going to play a lot this year in raw talent, it's Colin Simmons and then Colton Vosick is the most talented overall probably. Vosick's going to play a lot.
And then someone up here at the top, I'm trying to find it. They asked about the Brown situation, the tight end that dropped that note yesterday. Silent commit to Texas. Texas slow played, and then he backed off. Kind of what's
That just made a lot. That made that offer to clarity. That was exactly what we thought was happening behind the scenes. We said that they had slowed him down because we knew that he was ready to commit. We had a couple guys put in predictions for him based on our understanding that they would take his commitment.
Yeah,
he did take his commitment. I wish our sources would have said, "Yeah, we'll take his commitment. We just won't let him go public." All right, well then we won't put in predictions. So, I've got no problem with the way they handled it. It's a tremendous marketing opportunity. Texas fans were in their feelings because they're blind partisans. But if that was your son, if you were the father in that situation, are you still on Texas's side? Give me a break.
Yeah,
that was a great marketing opportunity. They just told the world that, hey, the team that had tight ends in the last two drafts, that had the number one class in the country last year, that is a lot of people's pick to be the national championship, saw us good enough to be in their program.
Yeah.
Maybe you should offer us. Maybe that'll open up some more doors, maybe a little more NIL opportunity. So, that's just smart marketing. I've got no problem with the way they handled that.
Yeah, and I thought it was respectful too, right? I didn't think I didn't think it was a gross way to do it. It was funny. That is the first time I've seen a silent decommit.
I'm glad that we got clarity on that, because that would have been one of those little mysteries of the cycle, because we're sitting there like, we knew that he didn't go public. We're like, are they waiting for Caden Prothro? Are they waiting to see what happens with USC and Mark Bowman or what? So what's the plan? If they didn't take the commitment, either something rubbed them the wrong way on the official visit, and I'm not saying that anything negative about the Browns. They seem like great people. Something that they didn't like, I don't know. Maybe he had thin wrists. I have no idea. Something slowed Texas down. Now what is it? Now we got to find out what that was. It could just be something like they want to keep their options open for a senior riser, which you can find at tight end. Or maybe they want to see how things play out. you know, they're operating off two tracks at most positions, cut in line or a guy that can wait in, or that will wait in line. Mm-hmm. Brown was a wait in line guy, but that would have probably taken away the option of getting a guy that could cut in line. So they just got more optionality now going forward.
Yeah. It's a bummer, right? It's the reality of recruiting. You know, it hurts for the kid, but it also helps my anxiety to think that, you know, Brown could drop at any moment. And so I'm at the gym, like, hope he doesn't drop right now. Hope he
doesn't drop.
Yeah. You know, so it's like that, no. That part's nice to not constantly be waiting on somebody to announce.
No, it's good to have communication on both sides. You hear so many, I guess, bad stories of teams dropping people at the end or kids deciding to leave right at the end when you think you got solidified numbers or if somebody's coming. So, but yeah, he handled that way better than a lot of other people would have. Trust me.
Yeah. And his dad's a pro athlete, right? His stepmom's a pro athlete. You know, they handled it well, but they also understand how to handle the media and all that stuff. So, like I said, there's no sour grapes. I like the kid. I thought he plays really hard. Wherever he ends up, I think, you know, in a couple of years, he'll be able to do something cool. We'll see if we even know this one. I have no idea. Eric, which defensive player was Sark talking about SC Media Days that was the one they didn't go after due to money? That happens all the time. I don't know.
Did he clarify it was defense or offense? Because I thought he left that one open-ended. I thought it was open-ended, and somebody mentioned Eric Singleton, and I said, well, that makes sense, but, you know, Texas's money wasn't going to be there. Because they felt like he was had some inconsistencies. There were some inconsistencies about him and his hands that they
were. Was that the Georgia Tech kid?
Yeah, in love with. So that's the guy that came to mind. But yeah, there's always going to be they're going to have a value on a player, and they're going to stick to that value within reason. Of course, if they're close, then they might go a little bit more. But I don't think he said defense. If he did, I missed that. So now I'm thinking defense. They didn't really need. They already had Brad Spence, right? They got Brad Spence early without even trying. They got 4 D tackles. What D tackle did they? They got 5 D tackles. What D tackle did they miss on? I don't think it was that.
Could it be Bailey that went to Tech at edge? We have a million edges.
Yeah, David Bailey was more of a luxury, and we never thought that they were going to get him just because Tech had to prioritize him more than Texas did. I think they were just trying to take some money out of Tech's pocket on that one.
So they drive up the price.
They didn't really go after a corner. They didn't need an edge.
Not sure on defense.
Safety, they kind of like the safety that went to Oregon, but they already had Michael Taft coming back. You can't have two white safeties starting at the same time.
Yeah, it's illegal.
For SEC rules. let me see here. Yeah, I don't think he said defensive player. Eric Singleton might have been it. It might have been the offensive lineman that went to Oregon, Pegram. I'm not sure. Maybe I'll have a clarifying moment later. No, it wasn't Max Clair. I mean, they were all in on Max Clair. They just lost another team from Ohio. Clair's a stud. As much as I like Andrews, that kid is different, man. Clair's really good. It might have been Eric Singleton.
Cool.
We reported they weren't going all in on Singleton, but part of we didn't hear that the issue was money. We heard that maybe I got spun. Maybe they said it was hands rather than money. They didn't want to spend that much. I don't know. Possible.
Was it the other, I don't know if we want to announce it, but the other receiver that we were looking at that we thought was going to be a higher round guy that stayed?
Yeah, it was the Louisville kid.
The other one.
Which one?
I'll private chat it.
No, I'm trying to remember here. I know there was two, but geez, man. If I keep all these names in my head, I won't have room for new ones. Oh, I never heard that name. Mm-hmm. I never once heard that name. Credible.
For real?
Yeah, you can say that. Jordan Tyson. People were speculating that. I never once heard Jordan Tyson leaving Arizona State, much less for Texas.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The answer is we don't know, but we named some that could be it.
Wait, now I'm trying to remember the other wide receiver. Oh, man, it's going to come to me. Yeah, you got to block these portal cycles out and these names, otherwise you'll never be able to make room for new ones.
Yeah.
The other receiver is good too. I don't know. Mosley. They got Mosley. Focus on Mosley.
Yeah, they got Mosley.
Yeah.
All right. Let's look at weight room. This was a cool name to hear. Yeah. Melvin Mills was mentioned in the weight room. He's kind of got lost in the mix. He bring in 900 transfers, but he's still sticking around. Coaches are paying attention, type of thing.
Yep. Louisiana kid, tough kid, and strong. And just, you know, I asked, you know, can he be a contributor for this team? And he's like, yes, of course he can. He just has to stick with it. So it's not like he's on transfer watch. He'd only be on transfer watch as if you know, he just sees too long of a road. But he, there's a path for him playing. He just has to stick with the program.
Manny Muhammad.
I'm still trying to figure out the second wide receiver. Yeah, Muhammad is in a contract year, and he knows he's getting ready for going up against NFL wide receivers. And if you've seen some of those NFL wide receivers, they are full-grown men. And so, yeah, he's got a he's always known as a technician. He's always known as a guy that, that does everything right off the field, take care of his body, eat right, all that stuff. But he's been attacking the weight room with a mind of getting stronger at the line of scrimmage, and it's showing up.
I just got to ask you, Eric, as an evaluator and then coach, your background in coaching. We'll hear things like – I've heard things like Manny Muhammad is ending up in a zone scheme a lot, and it's not to his benefit. He's a man corner. But then you'll go and look, and I think right now man snaps are at 25%. So 75% of the time you're playing zone. Mm-hmm. So is this idea of, quote-unquote, a man corner kind of a silly – don't you want a zone corner? And I get man schematically, but it's like that's what you're only doing that in 1/4 of the time.
If you went back to his freshman snaps, it would probably be a different allocation of man because they play a different boundary to field. And they had him playing man his freshman season because of Terrence Brooks had some issues over there. And so I think he was in more man. I bet he would be more in more man his freshman year than his sophomore year. I think he's a do it all corner. I think it's really good. He's scheme agnostic. I don't think it matters, but man, you know, obviously the way Texas plays man, strength isn't quite as important. They're not really super physical at the line of scrimmage typically. But yeah, you want to be a strong football player out there. He's a physical player. He had one of the biggest hits of the entire spring, yeah, laying out Trey Weisner. He'll punch above his weight. It's just more about him becoming a complete football player all the way around. He's got pretty much everything. He can play zone. He can play man. That won't matter in the NFL.
Yeah, it's just thinking, like, even for evaluations, I'll hear he's a man corner, and it's like, yeah, that's great. It looks awesome when you're evaluating, yeah. But, like, schemes now, and it's formationally dependent, right? If it's trips, sometimes that field corner gets locked down in man, like a stubby coverage, and sometimes in the boundary. So it is dependent on the formation, but I always hear, like, well, it's because he's a not even Manny, but just in general, he's a man corner playing in zone. It's like, well, you play zone 75% of the time. You have to do
both. And zone turns into man a lot.
Yeah.
So I mean, it doesn't matter. It's, yeah, I don't really get caught up on that. Like, now you'll see a guy like Richard Sherman, and you're like, okay, this guy is going to be off. You know, they play cover three.
They play a ton of three.
Mm-hmm. He played off a lot. So yeah, you're going to play your matchups a lot. A guy that's Manny, what, 6 foot, 190 pounds. He's going to be able to play everything as long as he has the physicality, which of course he has. He can play his own man. It doesn't matter.
What's his draft projection? What do you think?
I've said second round draft pick since he was in high school. He reminds me of Byron Murphy, who played not at Texas, not that Byron, obviously. he played at Washington, conveniently Byron Murphy went in the early second round. I've always thought that he's going to get dinged on, you know, maybe just the pure raw athleticism. They look for, you know, mutants at corner.
Yeah.
However, you know, Texas is producing faster guys than we realize. So if he goes out there and runs a, you know, we would have thought he came out with a guy named Javon Thomas who went to A&M. And the thinking at SOC was that Thomas was the better athlete, Muhammad the better, more complete cornerback, but not the athlete where Javon is. Yeah, man, he can dunk and do all that stuff, but not a freak athlete. I think that the athleticism, we're seeing these guys become more athletic on campus through strength and conditioning. Guys are running faster times than anticipated. If he goes out and runs a 4.45, which is actually NFL average, I believe, but then he has all the other NFL pluses, the elite stuff, like the way he plays, you know, technique, his mindset for football, football character, all that stuff. You know, I could see him going in the first round.
No,
yeah. That combine 40 time is going to be heavyweight. But if you look at film and everything else he's done, man, I think he's just a ball player that he'll be valued high by teams who value football players versus a 40 time.
Yeah, but then again, he could surprise, like this question alludes to is, you know, could he go out and rip off a time that everybody's surprised by? Now, we had heard Jadae was fast. We were not I've been pushing Jadae as a stud since 2022. That's not to pat myself on the back. It's just to say I knew the guy was a corner, not a nickel. Or he was playing nickel because he could play corner. We'd been hearing that he was fast. Gilbo's faster than Manny. And Gilbo's not quite as fast as Barron. So I don't think he's going to go run a 4.39 or whatever Barron did. But 4.45 would be perfect for Manny. perfect for him.
That's great. NFL average is 4.45. It just shows you how freaky those athletes are.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how last year everybody had more confidence in Muhammad going into the season than they did Barron?
Yep, they did.
Yeah. Me too, man. The Oklahoma State where he got burned in the slot, he was injured. Eric had to tell me, hey, he was injured. I was like, oh, okay. But that was my worry. And then, of course.
Barron's a different dude. Barron's a stud. Now, Manny, hopefully, the number one thing that Manny can do that would boost his NFL stock is not going to be a 40. Of course, you know, obviously that helps. But I think he's only got one career interception.
Mm-hmm. Correct. It was against Tech. Remember when he went up and posted up and took away from Bradley too, right? That big Tech receivers when he did it.
Yeah. So he needs more ball production to move up. That's really going to be the eye catching thing.
Yeah, and guess how you do that? You play zone.
Yeah. With the pass rush? Oh man. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Jade got some of his in, man.
Jade is something different, dude. Like he knew how to bait guys and he understood the concepts. Real film watcher, that kind of stuff. All right. And then we hear sophomore linebacker Ty'Anthony Smith. Work ethic, bigger, stronger, works his butt off.
Yeah, he's kind of like the Colton Vosick, where it's like, oh man, you know, you always hear all these things, you get really excited about him. He's just got to keep waiting for it. For you know, he's a little bit younger. He's up to about 220 pounds, maybe 225, but a very, very hard worker, strong in every way. You know, East Texas worker, just a really, really good all around athlete. But at the same time, he gets after it in the gym. Hear the same thing about Lance Jackson. Two East Texas guys, and they actually said that, you know, the East Texas guys, that's usually who they're referring to. Ricky Stewart's one too. Just always getting after it, maximizer, and then complete linebacker, just needs a little bit more time, a little bit more experience, and maybe just, you know, another offseason. He's going to blow up at some point, just a matter of when. I'm sorry, you mean wives.
Other families. Funny. All right, and then so we talked through wide receiver three as a battle. Just real quick, the battle to watch too. I think probably the biggest one, the premier one, is Gilbo versus Black.
Right. Yeah.
And then, however, the defensive tackle room shakes out.
Yeah, Gilbo versus Black doesn't really matter because somebody's going to start, somebody's going to play a lot, and Warren Roberson is factoring into that as well, but. Which one? Wide receiver?
Well, we did wide receiver three. Yeah. So we're good there with Mosley, corner, and then defensive tackle room, however that shakes out.
Yeah, D-tackle, that's just a giant room of competition. And so we're trying to figure out, A, who the complementary pairings are, and then which wave of the are they in. You know, I think it's going to be Watson, Brevard, January, Shaw, LaVon Johnson, Hero Canoe. Kind of LaVon Johnson, Hero Canoe, kind of the hockey line that comes in just to beat up the other team. I think those guys are going to come in and just be really physical. And then the first two waves, you know, there's a good mix and match between athleticism and the space eater. So we'll see. That's projection. That could change with one or two practices. And we're coming back here and saying, no, this is that. It's one thing to project and predict. It's another thing to come back and say, no, this is what we're hearing. This is how it is.
Will Ty'Anthony ever play Mike?
Could definitely play Mike. Him or Leonga, it doesn't matter. They could play Mike or Will. It won't matter with either of them. Right. The question is, why will he? Why would he? You know, you've got Bo Barnes that I think is really good for that situation as far as a developmental piece down the line. Ty'Anthony could play whatever you want at that position. He just needs to keep a little more experience, a little more playing time, a little more weight. I'm telling you, by his senior year, we're going to be talking about one of the best linebackers in the country.
So say, that's one of the guys you never take off the field. Like, he can cover receivers down the seam, man. Like, he's super athletic. Like, he's one of those rare type of linebackers.
Don't talk enough about how long he is, too. Can cover like a DB. Can find the football playing downhill. Complete linebacker. He's just not 235 pounds yet. You know, I mean, it's just whatever. He's going to be 235 in the NFL. That'll come when he's a grown man. But he's on a great, great developmental curve.
Do the coaches think that's more likely to happen this season? The turnovers, I think specifically talking about like a Gilbo and a Manny Muhammad.
Muhammad, they're not turning the ball over in summer 7-on-7 and not a ton of it from the starters during spring ball. So that's also zero sum. That's good. Does it mean Arch is protecting the ball? The coaches are going to know whether Arch is making turnover-like decisions, and they're going to know whether or not the corner should be making plays on the ball that should have been converted. I haven't heard – you know, that's one of my concerns about the defense is, you know, yeah, you lost 10 interceptions, I think it was, between Baron. Yeah, so those two guys combined for more catches than Micah Hudson last year. That's something we're not going to know how that plays out until we get in the game scenarios.
Yeah, between Gilbo, Paul pointed this out in his book, between Gilbo and Muhammad, they have one turnover. There's no forced fumble, only one interception. So they're not good at getting the ball. Doesn't mean I'd say the answer is no, just because you had really special heady players in Makuba and Baron. Expect a drop back there. Now hopefully the edges and the pass rush can create some mistakes there, you know. So maybe
Makuba was a corner playing safety as far as like his ability to react on the ball. I mean, think about that game stealing play against Arizona State. Derek Williams, I think, is going to get his fair share of turnovers, and we could see a pretty big bounce back year for. Well, it wasn't even a down year for Taff. I think he had three, but maybe four the year before.
Yeah,
I think the safeties are going to be perfectly fine. I'm not too worried about making up for Makuba. I am worried about corner. But, you know, here's the thing. Those guys are going to play more aggressively because there's so much faith in the safeties behind them to make up for it if they're wrong. So there's a path for a good year at turnovers, but there's not an individual guy like Jahde Barron that's going to ball hawk it.
Yeah, and trick quarterbacks to throw it directly to him. Yeah. Eric, is there a current player that you expected to have a bigger impact than they have so far? Maybe someone ready to blow up this season?
DJ Campbell is number one. Yeah, he's played so much. I expected him to have a breakout last year because he had played so much the 2 years prior, and that didn't happen. But now we're hearing all the hallmarks of it happening, better shape, you know, leadership, all that stuff. Normally when you hear those things, they're on that timeline where it's about to happen. But, yeah, he's the one. Let me see if I can come up with one that's not quite as obvious. You guys can chime in while I think about this. When I get a question like this, I have to go through every position.
This is like an article question.
Yeah. Let me see. There's context for it, right? There's, you know, if you saw Ethan Burke's sophomore year and people had him on draft mocks and all that stuff, you would say him. But now he switched positions. He had Baron Sorrell in front of him. So
How about Bosick?
Well, that's injury. See, that's the context there. So you can't really fault the kid for that. And then he's got people in front of him. Hell no, not LaFau. I love LaFau.
LaFau already.
Fans are on LaFau all the time.
I don't get it. LaFau's. That's right. He overran two plays last year. I had somebody on the board the other day. One of the goofballs. He said that Muhammad had a disappointing season because you remember two. There's two obvious plays, right? And then after that, you know, he's pretty good. He just wasn't as good as Jahde Barron, and you probably thought that Muhammad was going to be Barron, and now you're taking it personal that Muhammad didn't have the blow up year that you told your friends he would. Muhammad was fine last year. He's going to be good this year. LaFau was good last year as far as getting playing time for the first time. Now, I think we could quibble whether or not he should have been playing ahead of David Benda. I think that's fair because Benda was playing so well, not because LaFau was playing bad. LaFau's going to be a really good player this year. Really good.
Yeah. And with Muhammad too, right, with corners can get a lot because they give up a big play to six people's mind, but also corners get schemed, meaning that they can't be right. So sometimes it looks like the corner's making a bad play. They don't have a choice. They're getting high load. There's something schematically that's picking them out. So sometimes you'll see that as well where they get mad at a corner, but the corner couldn't have paused. Any choice was the wrong choice type of thing too.
Yeah. Corners give up catches, you know. It's not the end of the world. Find one who doesn't.
But I do want to see more turnovers from that room because Gilbo and Muhammad have a ton of reps. So it's like that's the point I want to see. All right. I mean, from a breakout perspective, he's not nationally known. Yeah, we'll see.
I think that'll probably be a year from now. There's going to be, you know, Anthony Hill's going to take all the oxygen out of that room. But I think people are going to start noticing him because they'll probably turn on some Anthony Hill tape and go, hey, man, this guy is really comfortable in coverage. He's physical in run support. He can locate the ball sideline to sideline. Very good change of direction. And then they'll ask coaches about him. The coaches are going to rave about him. I think LaFau is going to become – he's definitely going to land on people's radars this season. But probably a breakout would be a senior year.
And it happens. Sometimes you're watching huddle for a high school recruit and you're like, who is that other kid? So it's a thing. All right, cool. We good, guys? Anything on your heart that you just need to let out or anything? Or are you guys good?
No. Go to Inside Texas.
You made it back safely.
Oh, we got Inside Texas cards, dude. Are those for the public yet, dude?
That's nice.
My sister made me this.
Well, tell her to fire up the Etsy shop, dude.
I don't even know how she made it, but she made it.
Shouts out. All right, guys. Chat, thank you, guys. We got fall camp coming. Of course, coverage is going to heat up, go crazy. Go to InsideTexas.com, guys. You're going to have the best team news. You're going to know what's up. You're going to know where these battles stand. Everything we talked about is going to start to shape up and shake out. Most importantly, guys, football's around the corner. It's very exciting. Also, what's exciting is Paul's preview. You should buy it, guys. Digital copy if you're impatient like me. And then if you want to put it up on your bookshelf, you can get the physical copy as well. Another great way to understand your favorite football team. Thanks, guys. Sorry for the comment earlier. No, I just need to finish reading the comments before I put them up. It had a very wholesome start. So I was like, yeah, Lake Powell, that sounds really nice. All right, guys. Roaster, appreciate you as well. Eric, Coach, thank you, guys. And, of course, this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have a wonderful day. Peace.